Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi there, it's Megan Mitchell from Agents of Change. Thanks for checking out my podcast. If you enjoy the content, please check out my ASWB test prep courses for the bachelor's, master's, and clinical exams. Each Agents of Change course includes more than 30 key topics that closely match the ASWB KSA content areas. Our content is great for both auditory and visual learners and includes video walkthroughs, supplemental materials, hundreds of practice questions, and twice monthly live study groups with me. You can learn more and get 10 free practice questions at agentsofchangeprep.com. Thank you everyone for tuning in to Agents of Change Social Work Test Prep. And we're very excited today to bring on a special guest. Today we have Dr. Elizabeth Bowman with us, and she is going to share a little bit of the work that she does with you all today. So without further ado, welcome Miss Dr. Elizabeth Bowman.
Hi, I am Dr. Beth. I am a social work professor in the Master's of Social Work program at Gallaudet. And I worked in DC child welfare for 10 years. And now I am starting a nonprofit called the Restoring Ivy Collective, which serves sex trafficking survivors, hopefully nationwide as we continue to grow. As a sex trafficking survivor myself, this work is really, really important to me. So I have my master's in social work from Gallaudet and my PhD in social work from Catholic University, both of which have been so helpful in addition to the, you know, baptized by fire work that I was trained in child welfare. So being able to serve this population through trauma-informed yoga and some of this, the groups that we run is really exciting.
Awesome. Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you got into this work? And I know that you've founded Restoring Ivy. Could you tell us a little bit more about how this came to be?
So the Restoring Ivy Collective is a nonprofit based in DC and PG County. I started this as a survivor-led, full survivor board organization with the hope that we would be able to build a community for female sex trafficking survivors coming out of the industry at all different levels of their change, right? So people that maybe aren't completely all the way ready to leave the life, and those of us board members and other survivor leaders who have been working in the space for a long time trying to make a difference. I myself have only started sharing some of my story in the last couple of years, but the women that serve on my board have been working in this space collectively for some of them for over a decade. So this, the model of the Restoring Ivy Collective is essentially that in order to heal and grow, we need social support. We need each other. We need to connect. And so seeing women who are on this side where they've been able to distance themselves from the life is so critical to believing that that's possible. And then for those of us who've been out of it for so long, being able to reach back and be a part of the restoration of somebody else and to help somebody else find that healing and sense of self and just being seen as a person that matters is feels like a blessing to me to be able to do that.
Thank you for sharing that. So I know that you've worked in a variety of different settings. What is something that you've learned either personally or professionally throughout your work in the social work field?
So working in child welfare, one of the things that I found was particularly challenging was the rates of burnout and turnover that you would see in the staff. I was a supervisor in the second half of my child welfare career, and the level of individuals that had stress-related hospitalizations and physical health conditions that were exacerbated by stress, like all of this was really problematic. We were exposed to traumatic circumstances on a regular basis, many of us coming to the field with our own traumas, right? And so many people come to social work because they want to make the world a better place, partially because they've seen some stuff in their own lives that have, you know, given them that purpose. And so, you know, we collectively as the field of social work, the people that are teaching the MSW programs, the people that are supervising the child welfare and other helping profession workers, and the administrators and the people making the policies, really need to take into account the needs of the staff, not just the outcome measures or the baselines that they're trying to meet, right? Like we need to make sure that our staff are treated ethically and considered as whole people. So that, I mean, I think that was one of the things that I really took away from that work was, and that I'm bringing into the work that I'm doing in the Restoring Ivy Collective is this idea that like, we are human beings. We are multifaceted. We have so many things that we bring to the table, and some of it's good and some of it makes us more vulnerable to, you know, that emotional exhaustion and that burnout. And so considering not just the party line of self-care, but how do we care for each other as a community of social workers, I think is a really critical piece to success in the field.
So coming from the perspective as a professor, what would you tell your students about being mindful of burnout and self-care? Because I feel like in the field, it's taught a lot, but then when you get into agencies, like you said, you experience the burnout pretty quickly. So how would you encourage people to maybe advocate for their own needs or advocate for change within their agencies or even recognize when they are burnt out?
Yeah, so my dissertation was actually around organizational commitment and burnout dynamics in child welfare. So this is a topic that I feel pretty passionately about. I recently have put out a publication around sort of wellness models at the organizational level, which I have to say, I think is the biggest issue, right? We talk about the upstream versus downstream factors, right? We have the people falling in the water versus like, why are they falling in the water, not just fishing people out of the water, right? Like, so, and I think both are necessary. I think organizations are ultimately responsible when it comes to the issue of burnout. It's not to an individual staff member's, it's to blame an individual social worker and to say, you know, you are responsible for what's happening to you is unethical and is irresponsible, in my opinion. And I think, you know, while we can talk about self-care, and we should, right? As human beings in the world, we should constantly be taking our own pulse, right? How do I feel today? Am I anxious? Am I tired? Am I angry? What's going on with me? And why? As the whole person, the whole picture of myself, right? Are my social needs met? Are my spiritual needs met? Are my physical needs met? Exercise, sleep, food, you know, like do all of these parts of myself, have I been nurturing them, right? And if I haven't, that may be a time to set a boundary with people in your life, including your organization that you work for, to say, okay, I have to take off today, or I cannot answer phones past 5 anymore. Because I'm not attending to my own family, or I'm not going to bed. And so then I'm not able to think and be able to, you know, write these notes and these reports. So, you know, you can let people know when you're depleted, if you're checking up on yourself. And I think so much of the time when you're in that sort of just moving forward survival mode that we have to be as social workers in the field, you may not always be doing those pulse checks. And so I would encourage people to do just sort of a self-scan every morning before you check your email on your phone, before you leave to go out and pick up that kid at that school or whatever, that you're checking in with yourself and saying, okay, how am I doing today? What do I need before you think about what anybody else needs?
That's really good advice. Coming from the school system, where we were very overburdened, caseloads were just incredibly heavy. And it wasn't until a couple of years in that I actually started to kind of do some of those things that you're saying. I'm like, this is not possible for me to do this. It's affecting my health. And it was to the point where I'm like, I am not feeling effective at all in my own job. And that was the point when I'm like, I need to take a step back from this. If I'm not effective, none of this matters, right? I keep coming into work every day, seeing kids, checking the boxes. Did they get their minutes that they need on their IEPs, all of that? And like you said, it was kind of taking that step back and realizing, checking in with myself. I was not well. So I think that's really important to know what you're feeling in your body and what we need to do for ourselves first. So I think that's really good advice about doing that pulse check.
Absolutely.
It's hard though when we're in the trenches, but I always suggest to people that sometimes you need to take a step back. Like you're in the grind every day, right? And sometimes it takes like maybe taking a day, a personal day or some time to just step away and see how you feel when you've taken a step back. So very, very helpful advice, especially in the past couple of years with the pandemic. People are even past, where their tolerance was even more pushed even more than they were. So that's really helpful. Kind of building on the self-care thing, what is one professional tool or resource that you would suggest to other social workers that you've picked up along the way in your career?
Professional resource. I mean, I am the best professional resource that I have, right? I think for social workers, that is the case. You are your own best resource. And therefore, this idea that I am not worth anything to anybody if I'm not taking care of myself is the best thing that you can do to increase the likelihood that you will stay at your job and keep helping the people that are there, right? And so for me, trauma-informed yoga and general yoga, although I have been known to be triggered in a yoga class or two that is not trauma-informed. Taking trauma-informed yoga classes, using different expressive therapies. This semester, I'm actually teaching an expressive therapies class on dance and sand tray and play and art and drama, all of these different types of somatic-based therapies, right? Where we don't have to talk. We're using our body. And maybe there's a talk period at the end with trauma-informed yoga. Typically, there's sort of a debriefing, like what came up during the physical practice. But for me, I found that the moving through the poses, the stretching out my body, the feeling that I was doing something to take care of myself, even at that meta level, right? That like this practice is for me. And therefore, I appreciate it more. And I'm reinforcing the idea that I take care of myself as a belief about what I do for me, right? And it makes me want to eat better, makes me want to, depending on when I do it, I might go to sleep afterwards. Like, so yoga was something that increased that mindfulness. And during the process of the yoga, I'm constantly scanning. What am I feeling right now? What's going on? And so you can, may just be my hamstrings are tight, but you're noticing where in my body am I feeling this? Where in my mind am I feeling these feelings? And so you increase your ability to be mindful overall when you practice mindfulness in that sort of practice, right? You learn how to do it and then you can apply it to other parts of your life, like that body scan I talked about.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
About earlier.
So if someone was interested in trauma-informed or trauma-informed yoga, how would they go about finding a class that offers it?
So I would check local yoga studios. A lot of yoga studios do have classes that may have teachers who are trauma-informed, right? And so they should say something about that on their website. I will say there are more and more therapists that are doing this also. So you can look for a therapist that provides trauma-informed yoga, either individually or as a group. Do not equate gentle or yin yoga with trauma-informed yoga. Those are not necessarily trauma-informed. They can be, right? But typically trauma-informed yoga classes move a little faster because sitting still for long periods of time is challenging when you have high levels of trauma. So, and trauma-informed doesn't necessarily mean that you have, you know, massive numbers of ACEs and other, you know, complex trauma stuff that you're dealing with, right? But it just means that it's taking into account the experience of people who are traumatized. And therefore, if you have vicarious trauma or other stuff that's going on because of your job, it's going to be a little bit more sensitive to the fact that maybe you don't want to be touched. Maybe you are having a hard time laying for long periods of time on your mat. That kind of stuff, it creates more space for the individual experience than a typical yoga class.
Awesome. Good. Good to know, and good to note that gentle yoga is not the same as trauma informed. Because I know people often think those go hand in hand, but they're just different styles and different approaches.
Yes.
Awesome. We're going to shift gears a little bit. So I kind of have a new set of questions for you. So obviously we are agents of change, and we're trying to inspire people to be change agents in society. How are you an agent of change? And how have you displayed being a change agent in your career?
Well, I like to think that I don't really know how to be anything other than an agent of change. Between child welfare social work and supervision in child welfare social work, and the, you know, clinical work that I've done as a therapist, teaching social work students how to become, you know, the soldiers of the social work field, and now working in sex trafficking, anti-sex trafficking space in social work, I feel like the way that I look at the world is framed by the belief that anyone can change, mm-hmm. the right supports, with the right community, with help in the right places. And I think, I believe that I have gone through massive changes since my young days when I was sex trafficked and addicted to drugs and all of the things that I went through as a young person, to the fancy professor lady you see sitting here. I believe everybody is capable of change. And the work that I did with moms and their children in foster care was informed by that belief that those women, whether by circumstance or mental health or, you know, whatever, had gotten into a situation where their children were maltreated. They were capable of being safe with their kids, of protecting their kids, and, you know, all of these beliefs about motherhood, I believe that they were capable of that. And so I went into those meetings with moms, helping them to see themselves as I saw them, which was just as good as me, right? Like that I wasn't any different. And I didn't share my past at the time, but that really framed out for me a lot of my work. And I think that it's really critical, if you are going to be an agent of change, to believe that the people that you're helping are capable of that change. And so, and it may not be your definition of success. It may not be your definition of of health or mental health or, you know, whatever your, like the house with the white picket fence, whatever, that may not be their goal. And so, you know, but being able to meet that person where they are, helping them to find their best self and believing in them through the painful process where they might be nasty and they might stumble and screw up and, you know, regress and whatever else. Like, we have to believe that an individual is capable of change if we want to be a part of that change process, or we have no business doing it. And so, you know, with the work that I'm doing in the anti-trafficking field now, part of my sharing of my story, I feel like is critical to understanding why I feel so viscerally that anyone can change, because if I didn't believe that, how could I be sitting here, right? How could I have been where I was and be where I am and not believe that people can grow and can change and can find their way to whatever their path may be? And it may look very different from mine, but I want to be able to sit with someone and say, listen, like, I know where you've been. I've been in some dark places too. And here I stand because I was willing to stumble and I had people willing to hold my hand while I did it. And I want to be that hand for somebody else. And I think as agents of change, we have this amazing opportunity to be there for somebody's period of growth, for period of transformation. And it may not always happen. And we may be disappointed sometimes, right? Which contributes to burnout and all of that. But we need to be willing to be there for it and to show up.
So, yeah, I want to thank you for sharing that. I think it was, had a very good perspective. And I just really like how you touched on that this is your mindset. This is your being. You are an agent of change. And I think that that's so important to remember that there's a reason why we got into this field. So kind of going off of that, do you have maybe one piece of advice you would give to someone starting new in the field? They're fresh to the field. They're right out of grad school. What's one piece of advice that you'd give someone that, you know, having some years of experience under your belt, you think would be helpful for someone more novice to know?
So I tend to tailor this advice to my students based on their interests. And so I know you have a very wide range of audience. One piece of advice I would really like people to consider is to go into child welfare social work. And I know it's not for everybody, but there is a huge need. And you really do get to be an agent of change in that field. I think that it's the people that go in and have enough grit in their belly to stick it out. It takes a lot, but it gives you so much. And when you leave, you can do anything. So going into child welfare social work would be one piece of advice. And related to what I talked about before, boundaries, taking care of yourself in any social work field that you go into, really considering what it is that you need, and figuring out how to give that to yourself every day so that you can keep showing up and continuing creating that change in the world.
Awesome. And then my last thing before we wrap up, how could, if social workers are interested in the field that you are in, how could they maybe start to learn more or get involved? Are there other organizations out there? How can they be more informed about this space of social work?
So there's a lot of work being done right now in the anti-trafficking world. I would encourage them to reach out to the Safe House Project, who has a really wide-reaching network of different types of trafficking, anti-trafficking organizations that they work with across the country. So depending on where they are, feel free to reach out to me in the DC region. Our website is the restoringivcollective.org. So without the V, it's actually just restoringivcollective.org. And so feel free to reach out to me there. But Safe House Project has, like I say, a wide range of networks that they could put them in touch with if students are looking to get involved in their local area.
Awesome. And we will be sure to share your website with everyone on the podcast so that they can check it out and kind of reach out if they need to. But I want to thank you for taking the time today to kind of allow me to pick your brain and to share your experiences. I think you had a lot of really important perspective to give. And it, like, coming from the schools, I think the area of work that you're doing is something that a lot of people don't know about. So it's really, really important that that work is out there and that perspective is out there. So I want to thank you for sharing that today with our community. And I want to thank you for your time.
Great. Thanks so much for having me on. We'll be right back.